You're listening to Voices from the 2008 ACLU Membership Conference. This is Matt Dellinger. I'm here with Peter Gilbert, who is the producer and director, along with Steve James, of the award-winning At the Death House Door, which premiered on IFC in May. Also with James, Gilbert is one of the filmmakers behind Hoop Dreams, which won virtually every major documentary award. And welcome, Peter. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me here.
Now, yesterday I spoke with Alex Gibney, and we talked about his two films, Taxi to the Dark Side and Enron, Smartest Guys in the Room, and how they were both about corruption and abuse of power. And I've been trying to think of a connection between At the Death House Door and Hoop Dreams, but I can't really think of one.
Well, I think they're...
Are they connected at all in your creative mind, if not the subjects?
I think they're connected in the sense that the way we make films. Mm-hmm. Steve and I, regardless if we make films together or apart, the one thing that we are... I guess you would say stylistically or whatever for us is that we believe in telling people's stories, everyday people's stories. So Hoop Dreams is about the lives of inner city kids and their dreams, and also their families who are invested in their dreams, the coaches who are invested in their dreams, and what happens to them over a period of time. At the Death House Door, I think, in a similar way, is about Reverend Pickett and the transformation that he went through from being a pro-death penalty person to someone who's turned into an anti-death penalty advocate, and showing his transition during that time. So the key thing for us is we hope that through a film like Hoop Dreams that you actually see people dealing with the ideas of inner city life and poverty, but from their point of view. And Reverend Pickett and the people in the film talking about the death penalty, and you see it from their point of view. So from an individual's point of view, you get to a larger point of view rather than us being very polemical about it, about just saying, here's this issue, here's that. No pundits. We just want to tell through someone's story. I mean, the fact is Reverend Pickett's story is so incredible that...
We're going to talk to him later today, but maybe you could...
I was just going to say his story is so incredible that even if he, if we filmed him and he had stayed pro-death penalty, I think people would have learned a lot about the anti-death penalty issue through it just by seeing his story.
How did you meet him? How did you come across his story?
We have an association, Cartemquin Films, where we've been making social issue films for 40 years, with the Chicago Tribune. And two reporters from the Tribune came to us and told us that they were doing this incredible expose, really, investigative piece on a young man named Carlos de Luna, who was convicted for murder in Texas. He was a young Hispanic guy from Corpus Christi and was put to death in 1989. And they had done a piece that basically proves that he's innocent. We thought that was a great idea for a film. At the same time, you know, we didn't know at that time that there was actually footage of Carlos when he was alive. We didn't know about his family members. We were a little worried that, unlike, you know, a wonderful film like the Daryl Hunt film, Daryl's here, he's there, you can talk to him. Carlos, unfortunately, was, you know, killed.
Well, and that is interesting.
And so I was just going to say, so the Tribune... Then they sort of just offhandedly said, you know, also there's this guy who's pretty interesting. His name's Pastor Pickett, and he's a death row. He was the death row chaplain at Huntsville in the Walls unit. And he ministered to the first person who was put to death by lethal injection, and then ministered to 94 other people, as well as over 100 and something people who had gotten stays. And Steve and I both immediately went, well, there's an interesting job and there's a story. And then as we started to get into it, we realized that Carlos de Luna, who was the 33rd person that he witnessed their death, he was the person who haunted him throughout his life. And there we had a film.
Adding that to what you were saying earlier about wanting to make films about everyday people, in a way, the subject of At the Death House Door are the inmates who've been put to death, and we're forced to see their story through the eyes of this man who met them for a day. Now, granted, it was their last day, but...
Well, and I forgot to say the important thing that really made it something that we wanted to make a film about which was Reverend Pickett after he witnessed an execution and was with the men for 12 hours. He would go home at night and he would take out one of those old cassette recorders and would record his thoughts about what went on during the day. And those tapes are amazing. The first time he pulls them out in the film that you see is the first time we ever saw them.
You didn't know about them when you first started making
them? We knew about them, okay. But we had never seen them. Mm-hmm. We had only heard a piece of the Carlos de Luna tape. And when he pulled out those three boxes of tapes, like you would find in somebody's car, basically.
Like his baseball card collection.
Yeah, you know. And he opens these boxes, and there's 95 compartments, and you know, with tapes all labeled. And you realize that each one of those tapes is a person and a person's life. It was a very haunting experience for us. And then when you, we only basically used three of the tapes in the film, but when you listen to the tapes and what somebody like him, the guards, all the different people lived through, and these inmates lived through, it's an amazing you know, piece of history and an amazing way, I think, for people to look at a very complicated issue like the death penalty.
Did you get a chance to listen to all of the tapes?
I listened to all of the tapes.
And this is your job as filmmaker, to sift through immense amounts of material, just wade around in it. And
I have to say it was one of those jobs, though, that was absolutely fascinating because, yeah. As Jane says in the film, his wife, that those tapes were his tears. That's true. This is a man coming home in the middle of the night after having his, you know, hand on the leg of somebody who was executed, and coming home and talking about everything from what happened during the day, what his family members were like, what the victim's family members were like, and then just who the person was a little bit, and I think just that gut reaction of what he physically had witnessed. And then the concept of, you know, in 4 hours I got to get up and go to work in the morning. And it's an amazing testament to this man.
In the film that he talks
about. And they're very raw. They're not easy to listen to. And they're not always politically correct. I mean, that's what's fascinating about him. He's a straight talker about how he feels.
He's a very stoic man, though. And in the movie we learn that only his daughter has seen him cry, and that was a very extreme moment early in her life.
Oh, and we tried. You know, it's part of our filmmaking thing. No, we thought we had
him
once.
Stick,
no,
yeah.
We thought we had him once. There was one point where he was talking about Carlos, where he held his hand after he had been put to death. We thought we saw a little bit of a tear, but no.
You get the other guard, the warden, he starts choking up.
Well, Fred Allen, to me, is a lot. I mean, it's interesting. I've made other films about the death penalty. I got interested in it because of what happened in Illinois in 2003 and 4 with Governor Ryan. And
where he,
yeah, and I worked on a film called Deadline, and that was on NBC, and basically one bad cop put 13 people on death row who shouldn't have been there, right. And he pardoned them and then commuted everyone's sentences to life till we could, in his mind, figure out a way that you could make sure that these people really were guilty. I think that was about innocence for me. The thing that was interesting about spending 2 years with Reverend Pickett was the idea of, I realized when one person's put to death, the ripple effect that it causes. So, and it doesn't matter if the person's guilty or not, but, you know, we have state employees that we're paying who actually have to participate in this process of putting someone to death. Is that right for our society to do? You take a guard like Fred Allen, who's in the film, who was a compassionate guy, who was doing his job, who spent hours with the inmates, and he was the one who physically walked them into the room, put right. them up on a gurney, and then after they were put to death, took them off the gurney and gave them to the, you know, to the funeral home or whoever. I mean, you see the toll that it took on this man.
Right.
And that's not the 250 people that he was in the death house with who got stays. And it's a lot to ask of a state employee who's making $35,000 a year. And that doesn't include, you know, the people who actually administer the drugs, the wardens who have to deal with it. The ministers like Reverend Pickett, you know, a chaplain like him, having to deal with this. I never looked at the death penalty in that way, that, you know, someone actually has to do it.
Yeah. Do you, when you're dealing with a stoic subject, do you have to use filmmaking techniques to create emotion that you know is there but isn't necessarily evident on his, or does stoicism become its own emotion?
Interesting. He's stoic, but, and you can tell me if you think I'm wrong, but he's very charismatic.
Oh, certainly.
So, his stoicism, it's funny, he really reminded me a lot of my father's generation. You know, my dad was in battles in World War II. Never talked to me about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that kind of person. Right. I always wondered, who did he talk to? You know, who were the people that he really opened up to?
Did they have a club where they got together?
Yeah, like you think they have that. Right. I think Reverend Pickett, his, you know, I think it's an ability that he had was to be able to be with people and to really listen. He's an amazing listener.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he has what he calls the ministry of presence, which is basically just being there. If you want me to help, I'm there. If you don't want me to help. And so the technique I was going to say that we used, which is that we filmed him for 2 years, literally up to the point where we finished the film. And we often went over the same material over and over and over again. And part of that was is that we're talking to him as the person he is now, not who he was when he was in the middle of, you know, his work at the death house. And I think that he, by talking to him over and over again, it was sort of like therapy for him.
Mm-hmm.
It was one step further. He had written a book, but in the book he never mentioned the tapes. And he had never talked about the tapes. And he was now at this point where he really wanted to open up and say everything about how he really felt. And so what was interesting about him was is that we would talk to him. And we would ask him very hard questions, you know, like, why didn't you quit? Why didn't you just walk away? Why didn't you do, you know, the kinds of things. What was interesting is sometimes he wouldn't answer. And then the next day he would come in and say, you know what? I was thinking about that last night, and here's what I really think.
Yeah.
Or I'd get an email from him. And so that stoicism, in a way, it's not so much stoicism as someone who's really, he's still trying to work it out in his head what his purpose was, what he was doing, and what his life was about.
And I guess his job for so long was to hold it together for the other person.
Right, and that's the other thing he talks about. I mean, Who was going to be there for the guards? Who was going to be there for the wardens? Who was going to be there for the victims' families?
Right.
And the families of the people who were executed? He dealt with all of those people. It's an incredible load to put on anyone.
Well, it's an incredible film as well. Peter Gilbert, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
The film is called At the Death House Door. It'll be showing all summer long on the IFC channel and at special screenings set up by the ACLU around the country. You can hear more voices from the 2008 ACLU Membership Conference on the website aclu.org, and you can find the podcast feed in the iTunes Music Store. Just search for ACLU. I'm Matt Dellinger.